Welcome back to the Social Distance Podcast, guys. We apologize for the fact that we haven't done an episode for the last few weeks. We do explain on the body of the show why we haven't been doing any episodes. And we also go deep into the Twitter hack, the Tika Tawari Bitcoin hack. We also touch on the Meghan and Harry controversy. George doesn't have any idea what the fuck's going on. And the merch. There's plenty of information in there about the merch. So like, share, subscribe to our YouTube, to our Instagram, to our Twitter. Don't hack any of them, but subscribe and listen. Thank you.
I'm not prepared for this.
This is going to be a good one. I can sense it.
Let's get ready to rumble!
And we're fucking G.
Are we?
Oh,
I'm so excited.
Well, you can't impeach somebody that's doing a great job.
From Suchin, Tendulkar.
Bruce
George Bennett, you deserve this, big fella.
What's that salute?
He's put the finger straight through the one ply.
We try and create a comfortable environment. There's no bullshit.
There's just so many of them, aren't there, though, that just don't like it.
Nelson, be proud. Yeah, baby.
We are back. Finally. Jesus Christ, it's been a long time.
It was a real crossroads.
Didn't
know if we were going to return. How's it feel to be back, GB?
It's exciting. I was just still getting over the fact that I'm still in the intro.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was a special edition. I thought that was a celebratory edition, but is that hanging around, is it? I think we need to get rid of that. It makes me uncomfortable. Well,
you're the only one in this trio that's won a race, so stay in there until one of us out, someone else does.
Well, yeah, so John's going to be hard-pressed.
Or until the show plummets into the...
Well, basketball, yeah. I could have pulled like a highlight when I hit a three at basketball, but we got knocked out of the finals.
Hey, would you play again?
We took on Chutney's team 2 weeks ago, and I saw him line up. I thought, oh, here we go.
Well, we need to give a bit of background for this. This is a guy that you had a...
I had a bit of a run-in with him because he called me old. I was just having one of those weeks where normally that'd just bounce, but that...
Well, he said you looked like a... He said you look like a peanut, didn't he?
No, baby Jesus, a big thumb, but baby Jesus chimed in and said I was fat also, and that didn't.
Oh, that's good. He really did the rounds. Yeah. Really did the whole rounds on your self-esteem. He looked at you, walked on the court, and just stripped you apart. Started with age, then brought your BMI into the question.
Yeah.
And then George called you a peanut.
Yeah. So we're off to a cracker. And anyway, I caught up with him 2 weeks ago, and within a first minute, it was on again. Just a classic old-fashioned shirt front on a fast break. Should have been ejected, but it was all ball. I did that classic hands up, you know, when as soon as you put him on his back. And then I sort of had one of those moments where I'm like, what am I doing? Where am I at in life? You know, this is too far. You don't need to be doing this. You know, you need to sort of pull back and sit on the bench and have a think about it. And that's what I did. And I realized, maybe I need to hang up
with the hands. Occurs a lot in touch rugby. Like a lot of my mates in New Zealand play touch rugby every Wednesday night. And I go and just watch because I dream that one day I'll have the knees to run around a rugby field again. And I watched the amount of aggressive touches. And there was a great one the other day where people that we, you know, and they're all boys that went to school together and they're now like 30. And they just... They run up the ball, and the idea is to, you know, rotate a quick touch. So you sort of touch and go, touch and go, touch and go. And every now and then you get one guy just puts the big touch on, and then it kicks off. And then the whole day you just watch the niggle, and it just escalates, and the touches just get bigger and bigger until essentially touch rugby just becomes like a who can palm each other the hardest.
You don't realize you're like a strong, fully grown man until you're a strong, fully grown man, eh? It's like,
I'm not a strong, fully grown man.
Like when you buy a puppy and then like one day you wake up and you're like, fuck, it's a dog, you know?
Like, yeah. I'm still waiting to realize one day, wake up and be like, fuck, I'm a full grown man.
Hey, Bill, talking of full grown men, how are you handling the last week? Because you've been through hell, man. Because a full grown man, Tika Tawari, has stolen your Twitter.
Who the fuck is he?
I honestly thought that you were just investing bitcoins. I thought this was some practical joke. Is this actually what's happened?
Mate, I don't know anything about Bitcoin. And we should We've been out of the game for a couple of weeks here. Look, we'll put what the people need to understand. And when I say people, I mean our loyal, loving fans that we love equally. What they need to realize, what those idiots need to realize, is that we actually have a full-time job as well. George has been racing. I've been at training camp. And most importantly, I've been trying to defend my personality, who I am, on Twitter for this whole period. Because Tika Tiwari snaked in there and he's been giving all my followers Bitcoin advice. So if any of you out there that follow me on Twitter bought Bitcoin, I wish you all the best. But Jesus.
I like how he's picked a really good corporate photo to match that blue tick. Yeah. Like it looks so official. Like if anyone wants crypto advice, you've always going to go with a guy in a nice suit, a white wall with a bit of greenage, and the blue tick, it's like, where do I sign?
But well, then, I've been really led down the garden path by this guy because I've actually invested all my money in Bitcoin because I thought that was just you, Bills.
You'll probably be successful. Put that photo back up, Jonesy. I want to just focus on a couple of things here, okay? So the first thing I want to focus on is that the fact that if your name is Tika Tiwari, why would you create a Twitter handle called @Sambuli? That's number one.
Yeah, that's a red flag.
It makes no sense to me. Okay. And so then when I contacted Twitter to say to them, hey, I've been hacked, they didn't believe me. It was such a ball ache because what happened is I went on and I can go on Twitter every single morning on my app, you know, Twitter app, boom. Went on there one morning and I was logged out and I thought, oh, that's weird. So I tried to log back in. Password didn't work. I was like, that's also strange. I mean, I could be forgetting it. Forgot password. Comes up on Twitter with this email address that's associated with your Twitter handle to then send you the forgotten password. And it was this email address. I was like, I mean, they block out half of it, so you can only see the first.
Wasn't your email address is like a 15-year-old, like?
No, it wasn't even that.
Woman,
like,
woman's man 69 at
Gmail.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't it wasn't. It was this email address that I didn't recognize. I was like, that's strange. So then at that point, I couldn't retrieve a password because if I was to send password, it would go to this guy, which is obviously eventually what happened when I conceded. And I was like, fuck it, just have my account. And I said, send him the password.
And I'll buy some Bitcoin while I'm at it.
Before that,
let him go.
I contacted Twitter. And then they replied and said, we can't help you because the email address that you are emailing us on isn't associated with your account. I said, that's the whole point. I've been hacked. Like, look at this guy. His name, going back to my original point, if your name is Tika Tiwari, you're not having a Twitter handle called @SamBeauty. It makes no sense. The dots don't line up. No. Help me out, Twitter.
You know, do you guys know that meme with the guy with the real pain, the famous guy with the really painful smile that always looks like, you know, he's sort of smiling, but his eyes are crying. Yeah. He has that smile about him.
That's Key and Peele.
It's actually awesome. I saw a documentary on the guy. He's like a Ukrainian. There's a whole documentary about him, how his life's been ruined by that meme. Because everywhere it's like the painful meme and everyone's
My life's been ruined by Tika Tiwari. But I think one of our listeners actually sent a tweet out. More recently we haven't done a show for a while, but I've been using our social distance podcast on Twitter as my personal Twitter account.
Well, you might as well just have it then. That's our gift.
So I've been tweeting on there, and one of the guys replied, one of the guys that listened to us, and said that we should get Tika on as a guest. Like, so if you are listening, Tika, we'd love to have you on the show and hear your side of the story, mate. Like,
Tika, well, this is not a trap. This guy? He's a New Zealander. I mean, Tika Tiwari like is a very New Zealand name.
Yes, it is.
If anyone recognizes this face, call Crime Stoppers.
Let's put him. Can we throw him up on our Instagram, Jonesy?
Yeah, we could try.
Right, I'm just. Not? Oh, let's see Tika Tiwari net worth. Should we do a bit of investing?
He's got
$6 million.
What? 6 million?
Yeah. What is Tika Tiwari investing in? Tika Tiwari is a big believer in Bitcoin and blockchain. He expects technology to grow enormously over the coming years.
But he's also. Do you know what's also fishy? Is that he has his own Twitter account called @TikaTiwari, and he's got like 16,000 followers. So actually, come to think of it, Maybe what, yeah. maybe Tika's also innocent. Been rolled. Yeah, he's innocent. So we've yeah. been hacked. We've been hacked. I've been hacked by a bot, like a whatever, and they're using it, poor old Tika's name, but he's got nothing to do with it.
And they think if they do click the link that Tika's given this advice, but it's this other guy.
So we've actually both been rolled.
So then we can get him on as a guest because he's innocent.
Yeah. And he's real.
Why don't you slide into Tika's DMs from your Tika account and say, mate, here's a bit of inception for you. You're messaging yourself from it, you know, and just explain the story and see if we can. I'm just looking at what he's actually tweeting on your behalf, Bules. And
do you know what was funny? I went to the day I realized my Twitter account was hacked, I started the process. And then over the course of the next 3 days, if you watch the evolution of my Twitter account, it went from like this photo of Tika Tiwari in the profile, but then like still my background and my bio, like Sam Beauty Rotorua, born and bred professional cyclist, blah, blah, blah. And then like all of a sudden my tweets started disappearing. So there was only tweets back to 2019. And then a day later, there was only tweets to 2012. Then my bio disappeared and the whole evolution of the Twitter account started happening. But obviously I'd realized from the moment I couldn't log on. And like,
well, I think that's a good thing. There's a lot of pretty marginal tweets, especially when, like we've talked about, that you needed a breathalyzer on your phone because you often.
Look, I'll tell you what, the fact that I haven't been tweeting those ridiculous tweets, I mean, partly is due to the fact that I'm no longer drinking. But secondly, the fact that I haven't got Twitter makes it real, it's real helpful.
Yeah, what have you done with all this free time?
Mate, honestly, for 3 days, I was sort of strewn on a bit like, fuck, because the thing with Twitter for me is that I use it as my news feed. Like, I follow just about every single news website.
Oh, that's a reliable news source. That's like, I get my news from Facebook, from the anti-vax group on Facebook.
Well, how the fuck do you think I know so much about Bitcoin? And I follow like BBC and New Zealand Herald and, you know, all those kind of things. And that's what I use as my news feed. But after 3 days, like, I haven't been on Twitter for 6 or 7 days now, or whatever it's been, and my life has not changed in one bit, other than the fact that I don't know what's going on in the world. But that also doesn't matter because it doesn't change how
it's good. Yeah, I think whoever's using Tika has probably done you a bit of a favor.
Yeah,
except you've lost all those videos. You've lost all those cooking videos.
I lost all them, which is not necessarily the end of the world either.
No, I think he's done you a real solid. I think he's brought your attention to the here and now, and I think that he's gotten rid of a lot of things that'll hoop around to bite you in the ass after cycling when you try and get a real job.
There's three things I've lost. There's three things I've lost from this Twitter account. There's the cooking videos, number one.
Oh, good.
About 1,000 followers.
Oh, yeah.
And about 100 grand. About 100 grand in Bitcoin. And otherwise, that's it.
Well, Bitcoin's going up, mate. So just hold on to it. Hold on to it. I'm sure Tika is good for it when you want to take it out. Hey,
just to wrap up currently, what's the current state? You don't have a Twitter account or you do?
So what's happened is Tika's been booted.
Okay. I can't find you on Twitter now. I'm just looking for you now, but you don't exist.
No, I'm there. So if you go to Sam Bewley, at Sam Bewley, it now currently has no profile photo. If you can see that, it has no profile photos. It has my bio back.
Oh, that's
It has Rotorua born and professional cyclist, blah, blah, blah. The 1,000 followers missing and still Bitcoin tweets. But I also don't have access to this account at the moment.
Just on your bio there, Sam, do you have any Palmares in your bio?
I think I do, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So you are one of the worst type of people.
It says Rotorua born and... Rotorua born and bred professional cyclist for ACT Green Edge team and premier podcaster for the Social Distance Podcast.
Oh, no, it doesn't have your Palmares in. You don't have like third in today's Dag the Worst.
No, it says, Rotorua born and bred Kiwi professional cyclist for ACT Green Edge team, double Olympic medalist.
Oh, it does, yeah.
Oh, it does. It does. It you does. Had to slip that medal in. Yeah.
Anyway. You couldn't have just let that go through the keeper? You couldn't just like, you couldn't just, you know, like people, it was only 4 years ago or it was only 8 years ago. Sorry. Like people, you know, people remember.
It was like 30.
Slide it in. How many?
2008. That was the first one.
Oh yeah, it's going. Yeah,
I'd probably does need to go in there then.
No, it's even worse now because now I'm starting to sift into one of those old dudes that's like, oh, I want an Olympic medal when no one gives a shit anymore because it was so I'll be 65 still holding on to that.
The fact that you've just labelled it as a general Olympic medal means bronze.
Mm.
You know, if it was gold or silver, you'd just call it out, but medalist.
No specifics.
Dual bronze.
Yeah. That's what happens every time you get third in a race. You just say, yeah, podiumed at. No, you got third at.
Yeah, but it was podium.
Or when you get ninth, he was top 10 at the Vuelta.
He
was 10th at the Vuelta.
Yeah, that's the, you know? The funniest was back in the day at Green Edge was when they'd be really scrambling for those race reports and they'd call out, you know, where does it stop? Top 10's the limit. But when they started calling top 25, hang on.
When did that bracket expand, eh?
Fist pumping on the bus going, 24, bro. We cracked it.
In 2019 at the Vuelta, it was the first time I ever finished in the top 100 at a Grand Tour. I finished 100th. And
really?
I made it very clear to the person that I was with on the last stage. You remember the stage, George.
Is this in Santiago de Compostela?
No, it was in 2019 when we finished close to Madrid, that mountain stage, and we went over those climbs at the start, and it was like kind of like, looked like the UK a little bit, you know, real foggy. Yeah. And I was in the group. I can't remember who was sitting 100th on the GC at the time, and I was 101st, and it was the last mountain stage. The next day was just a sprint in Madrid. And he was about 8 seconds in front of me, and I just told him, like, I just said to him, mate, I'm going to attack you with a K to go because I want to finish 100th. And he's like, fuck, go for it. You fucking idiot.
You should put that in your Twitter, bio.
100th of the Vuelta. Top 100 at the Vuelta.
Yeah. Hey, GB, how was it racing in the new kit, mate? Because last time we were on this show, you really did us a solid by getting us as much promo for the podcast as possible. So on behalf of me and Bules, I want to say a massive thanks, mate. The tactic worked.
That was a bit of a ball ache.
Our last show is our most, next to the Richie Port episode, it's our most viewed and listened to show because of your controversy. So if you can say something else to gather some media attention, we'll tag Cycling News, at Cycling News in this afterwards, at Cycling News.
Can we just make a highlights reel and say, okay, just go through and these are your main talking points?
Yeah.
Buell said something sexist at 12 minutes, 4 seconds.
Yeah.
Jonesy was discriminatory against gingers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Actually, quickly, before you continue, do you know what really pissed me off about that article? The article didn't need to be written. That's the first thing. But secondly, what really pissed me off is that Jonesy and I got absolutely no mention.
Nothing.
Like, it's like we're
Olympic medalists, you know, so we don't count.
We're pawns in this puzzle. So George is, you know, if they knew, you know, George Bennett's podcast, oh man, come on. It's about the three of us.
Mate, I introduced you as a guest.
Yeah.
For fuck's sake. Mm.
And as a tripod.
You're the only one out of the three who's been nearly booted. So
I was going to say, as a tripod. It's my leg that's shaky, you know? It's my side that's going this way. You're like, fucking hold it up, mate. You're here by the skin of your nose.
The two pillars at the top of the screen here just get nothing.
Nothing.
We need to rearrange the cubes and put you two at the bottom and put me off in the left corner somewhere.
I could do that.
Here we go. There
you go. I'm down the bottom. Yep.
Yeah, I did feel a bit bad because suddenly I was like, oh, there's this. You know, you just don't want a media attention about something that, yeah. I mean, it was my, of course, you say, I mean, it was true. I was saying, you know, I wanted a new black kit. And I tell you what, in a way, I felt a little bit vindicated on the first stage of Paris-Nice when nobody knew who the fuck I was. And I tell you what, I was expecting like to go out in a new kit. It was going to be this cool, like, great experience, whatever. It was horrible. It was actually horrible because everybody just flicked me permanently. You try and ride in a line like Paris-Nice. You've done Paris-Nice, Bules, and it's pretty. Actually, have you done Paris-Nice?
Yeah.
Yeah. And
finished it's 150 second.
Top 150.
No, it's just outside.
Yeah, just. And it's one line, and you're always trying to stay in the line of your team. And nobody recognized that I rode for Jumbo Visma. So the whole time I was just getting flicked off the wheel. And actually, that's one I ended up crashing full gas because this a guy just came in, completely took my front wheel out, and I landed full gas on my head. And I went to him a couple of days later. So the next day was the TT. So the day after the TT, I rode up to him and I said, mate, like, just seriously, what? I'd love an explanation, because what the hell were you doing? And he was extremely apologetic and everything.
Did
and
he
said, go? Oh. So, yeah, hands up. No, but he said his brakes failed, which I thought was an interesting.
That old chestnut.
I think he failed to brake, but
you don't often hear a brake failing on a bike, do you?
Nah, not really, not believably. Anyway,
it's not the, like, this isn't the movies.
Yeah. So, but anyway, they just, you know, they just, because I'm sitting last man at the back of the train, just hanging out, not really too worried about what's going on, and they just get smashed off. So in the end, I ended up changing my helmet and put a yellow helmet on because I just couldn't handle it.
Like, good idea, but also you're gonna benefit. Sorry to interrupt. You're gonna benefit from that yourself, GB, when you're the leader in up and coming races. Yeah. Because when I think when Luca, when Mezgets was the Slovenian champion, he used to wear this. This was back when we were Mitchell and Scott, and we had this bright yellow Scott helmets. And he was wearing a, like, Slovenian colored helmet, so it was like blue, white, and red. And when we were trying to help him in the finishes, we couldn't see him. But like, you couldn't.
Yeah. It's amazing how much you lose your peripheral vision, right? Because I didn't realize it until I noticed, and I was like, "What's going on here? Why is everyone kicking me off the wheel?" And then I'd be like, "Oi!" And then they'd be like, "Oh shit, sorry, it's you, mate." Yeah, and then they'd let me in. And then so I'm like, "Well, okay, what if it wasn't me? You were just being an asshole." Like,
sexist, eh?
So is that what everyone else is copping? Because
for the non-diehard bike people, so the etiquette is, if you're riding in the team, people have to let you into the train, particularly if you're going for GC or whatever.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. What are you doing?
Especially in a nervous race like Paris-Nice, you all try to stay together. There's wind. The whole thing is just, you can essentially get yourself out of any situation as long as your whole team is sitting together. And it got to the point where I think the team that I really got confused with was Quebecca. And I think they even put something on Twitter saying welcoming their new signing, George Bennett. And I went, oh, this is pretty interesting, because it actually looks like that. So I had a hell of a time until I changed my helmet. But then in the mountain stages, I just put the white one back on because it didn't really matter. But I'm hoping it's something people get used to. Otherwise, it'll. But I had a good talk to Swifty about it, because he's the British champ, and he said it's horrible. He said it took him a long time before people realised. Like, now I know he's to expect, and he's there.
They'll get used to it before. They'll get used to it just in time for you to lose it next year.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly.
How much has Caitlin pulled the whole, if it wasn't for me wanting to go back to New Zealand, you wouldn't have won that jersey? Have you had that one yet?
Nah, she hasn't pulled that yet. She's actually still in New Zealand.
Caitlin, if you're listening, save that.
Save it.
Yeah.
Save that.
Oh, it's good now. I can preempt it and say, oh, you're just saying that because you got the idea from the podcast. She wouldn't listen to this. There's no way she would listen to this anyway.
She does listen to it, in fact, because I think she does listen to our show, George. Because the region is because you don't, and she needs to uphold the, like we say, wobbly leg. You know, your legs, Jones and I are the two strong legs of the chair. Yours is wobbling as shit, and Caitlin's the super glue holding your leg together. That's how we look at it. And, but actually, on Caitlin, we have to say the merchandise, actually, this, we're going to slip this in mid-air. We're actually really, we are kind of close now, because we had some issues with the logo. And Caitlin from Caitlin Field of Fine Art, she's saved our ass once again, and she's updated the logos for us. And I think that they should be okay now. I've just got to get
What have we got coming? What in particular?
What haven't we got coming? That's a great question. We got everything, man. Everything.
You name it.
We're gonna just smash it with.
We got everything from
different things.
Coffee cups to laptop holders to phone chargers to hats to jandals to vests to jackets to jerseys to pants to shorts to undies
to face masks
phone covers to plates.
A little, knives, anything to a little forks. Bit more sort of X-rated?
Yeah. Now we've got two wobbly legs. Two wobbly legs. This one's,
there you go, cycling news.
Yeah, that's it. What time in the show? That was 24:40.
There you go.
All right, we might as well fire off the email now. Okay. Sensational.
Should we get out in front of that one?
Just, you asked. Should we just you handballed that to me, George.
I was not thinking of that.
No, I wasn't.
I was thinking of a Monopoly set or I don't know.
Yeah, what we'll do is we'll cut that bit out, but we'll leave this in so that the listeners can just leave.
What did you say?
What we're talking about.
Well, you can just say it wasn't me. I didn't say it. It was this guy. Tinker Tawari. So when are you racing again, Bills? When are you racing again? How's the arm? How's the training? Change gears.
The arm's good. The arm's good, Johnny. Yeah? I've been up in Andorra for I'm back in Drona now, but I was in Andorra for 3 weeks. Basically, as soon as I was on the road, I did 5 days here in Drona training, and then I went straight to Andorra, and I've done a lot, actually. I feel pretty good, surprisingly good. So I think that I was pretty unsure about how I was going to come back. I mean, obviously, I was focusing on doing as much as I could while I was off the bike with running and hiking and all that stuff, but I wasn't really sure how if it was going to translate across or how fit I was really going to be and all that stuff. But honestly, within a week, I already started to feel quite good on the bike and did a big load up there. We had a little training camp up there, had my coach there, and we ripped into it. So, yeah, I'm ready to race. I'm ready to race. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of races on the calendar at the moment, so I've got to wait a little bit longer. But I should be back racing in a few weeks, I reckon.
How long does it take, George, to get form when you've had a spell or a break? And what do you do? Just smash yourself with long Ks and eat bugger all?
No, I reckon altitude's the key. Eh? I don't know if you need a heap to racing to be good anymore. Right? Like that used to be the thing. They used to just, I feel like they used to be like a communal the first half of the year, like especially back in the like in the 90s or 80s, 90s. You always heard stories like it was almost like the first races until like May were essentially like a training group. So you'd start off in like Valencia and they would just ride along and then they'd have a sprint, like they'd race the last 10Ks of every stage or something. And then throughout the year, it would just get like a little bit more, you know, they'd all get fitter together and they would, so you just show up at the first races and you haven't done efforts or anything, you just ride around. And then it was just, yeah, it was like their local bunch ride for the first three months of the season. And then by like the middle of the year, they'd be absolutely pinging. But now everyone just, now it's, you know, how many efforts and stuff you've been doing, Bills? I mean, I know for us in Tenerife, we went to Tenerife on the top of a volcano. That was awesome. But it was full gas camp, you know. You're basically, I was the worst guy at the camp by a long way. I got there late and I was like, holy shit, our team is, everyone was just killing me. And that was a race in itself.
People do hit the ground running these days, eh? But it's going to be a long time when I do race, which I think will be in a few weeks. It'll be September, October, November, December, January, February, March, April. Be like coming up 7-8 months.
Shit. Is that the longest stint you've ever gone?
Without racing, I'd say so, since I've been pro, yeah. And keeping in mind that nearly 4 of those months was completely off the bike as well. Mm. So I reckon I'll feel it. But I've been, like you say, George, like you train to, you sort of do a lot of race simulations, for lack of a better term, in training these days. Like that training camp we just did in Andorra, we were going hard, man. Like we were doing days, you know, sort of, for example, six-hour days with 4,500 meters of climbing, efforts every climb, full gas every climb, you know. So you are simulating racing in a sense. So should be all right.
Have you heard all this stuff about heat training at the moment? Where you measure your core body temperature and you've got to keep it at 38.5 degrees. And they're trying to say that what Matt Heyman did leading into Roubaix was like the perfect zone training when it's hot, at the not too hot, but not too cold. And that produces more oxygen and all this sort of shit.
Like, I just did a thing in Nationals where I swallowed a pill and then I was flying. No. And then.
what time code? 29 minutes cycling news. Yeah.
A temperature, like a little
thermometer.
Yes, yeah, a thermometer. And you swallow it and it goes into your guts. And then they just scan you. Like they put it essentially looks like an iPhone close to you at the end of the ride. And it you know, this little bullet thing that you've swallowed stores 8 hours of data, and it can give you your whole core temperature rise through the races, and tell you, you know, because that's the biggest limiting factor in performance, you know, is if you start overheating, you just suck. And it's pretty interesting. I tell you what, you generate some heat.
Oh yeah.
How hot did you get at the Nationals?
Oh, I haven't gone through fully yet, but you get, basically they say once you start getting to 40, you start shutting down in a big way.
Yeah. Well, that's when you start getting temperatures like the flu or whatever. Yeah. You
get, but I built a sauna, Jonesy. I didn't build a sauna. I got a sauna built. Just for Rio. Where are we going? Tokyo. Just adaption wise.
Beijing.
Oh yeah.
Beijing, yeah.
Go on, get a medal.
I had a couple of saunas in that sauna when I was up there, GB. Oh, and also I dropped your vacuum cleaner back off yesterday before I left.
Oh, good. Yeah, that was so annoying not having that.
But it's full. You have to empty it.
Oh, I'm going to empty it in your lounge.
Hey, what's going on in the America's Cup, Bills?
Is it finished, all over? What happened? Boys won. Boys did the job. We won.
Jeez, that was down and out.
What? Jonesy.
Were you down three races? Or something?
No.
Does
no.
anyone else care about the America's Cup? Because, like, for example,
no.
I
that's bullshit.
I get behind America's Cup. I'm a big, you know, I'm big fan of New Zealand sport, and you know, anything that New Zealand's good at, I get behind. It's just one of those natural patriotic responses. But I was thinking, I've been walking around Europe for the last 5 weeks, and I haven't heard a whisper of that.
Yeah, but if you're in Italy, it'd be different. I bet you.
Well,
it would be. I reckon it would be. So we had an Italian mechanic in. We had an Italian mechanic at training camp in Andorra, fully behind it. He said, in Italy, it's big. When we were riding with Scott bikes for the last 10 years before we switched to Bianchi's this year, they were a Swiss company, and I used to talk all the time to them about America's Cup because they had a lingy. So anywhere that had boats, they're into it, man. It's big. The UK is big.
There's four boats. So there's the four countries in the world that have boats care about it, and the other 189.
So who are the four?
America, this year it was
America, yeah. England, Italy, and New Zealand.
All right, because I remember 1 year in Australia. So it was massive in the 80s when they gave a national holiday when they finally won it, first time in 100 years. And Bob Hawke said, "Anyone that sacks a worker tomorrow is a bum," and it was huge. And then I remember they put all this money into this boat for Australia. It was going to be this new design, and it fucking snapped. And there was footage of the boat snapping in half and all the crew jumping off, and it just sank to the bottom. It was like $10 million to taxpayers. That was it. Because that was since then, we've just, we're giving up.
That was when Kiwis brought in Plastic Fantastic, the KZ, what was it? KZ7 or whatever.
KZ7.
The fiberglass boat.
Oh, yeah.
Because they used to be sailing, like in the 80s, they were just sailing on wood. And then we created a Plastic Fantastic with fiberglass, and the Aussies tried to do the same, I think, and then they couldn't.
Snapped it.
Went back to AFL.
What was the Aussie boat called?
What was whose?
The Aussie boat called.
I don't know.
Australian Spirit or something.
Australia Spirit. One or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, Australian One, was it? No, we were NZ One.
It's a strange mix of like corporate and government, right? So we had like Steinlager and, you know, when Black Magic. Was it Black Magic?
Yeah, Black Magic.
Steinlager and, you know, all these. So it's the government puts in quite a bit of money, I guess, and that's in terms of like, you know, it's an investment in having, and if you win the cup, you then get to host it, and therefore you get a huge amount of tourism, you know. But it's a bit of a gamble. It's almost like governments sort of their foray into sports betting. You know, they need to win for that investment to have any sort of return, right? Because if they put the money in, they won't win the cup, and then they get to host it.
Exactly. And that's what Grant Robinson, the finance minister for New Zealand, said the other day, is that they will put in money again. The New Zealand government will put in money for the next campaign, but conditional to the America's Cup being in New Zealand, the event being held in New Zealand, because it's possible that it's not.
Because but if you win, you host it, no? Is that not
no,
the...
No, no, no. So it's because it's a billionaire sport, basically money talks. And what happens is there's a what they call a challenger of note, I think. And they can then say, we're the official challenger for the cup. And they can put up the money. And then if the money is considerably more and it's going to be more beneficial to Team New Zealand or to the boat or to the crew or to the organisation, then they may choose to go and have it in the UK.
Imagine a sailing race in the Bermuda Triangle. The cost of
that'd be awesome.
The amount of
imagine the Netflix doco series.
just like Last Man Standing. Last Man Standing wins. You just like seeing these boats just go. Whew.
Just survival.
It'd be awesome.
Well, like this is a new class of boat that spins in 360.
They're just walking up with a submarine.
That boat was called One Australia, and it was the 1995 semis snapped in half, 17 crew members rescued, and then they went out with the US Navy to conduct a salvage operation. Didn't find shit. And well, they get the mast and all that. Yeah.
Speaking of the boats, I got to say, these AC-75s, a new class, I say they sailed in this America's Cup. Unreal, eh? Holy shit, man. These boats can go 100 kilometers an hour. They're just out of the water. On four.
We need to give a shout out to one of our OG guests.
Yeah, Simon Van Veldhoven. Rhino.
Yeah, Simon Van Veldhoven. He was on that boat that won. So we had
him
on.
Really?
Yeah.
Yep. He was part of the winning crew.
We need to get him on. I sent him a message after they won the other day and said, like, well done, Rhino. And he replied like 5:30 in the morning, just with all these emojis.
the eggplant emoji in the water.
the best thing about a billionaire sport, it would be the winning party. Like, imagine the quality of grog that would be flowing at that thing.
Oh yeah,
it'd be awesome.
It's a strange. I always wonder why so many people get behind sailing. And I get behind it too, of course. But is it not the world's most inaccessible sport? Like,
up there.
You cannot go and like you can watch the Tour de France stage and then get inspired and dust off your old shitter and go for a mountain bike around the block or something, right? Or kick a rugby ball around, or I don't know, any sport. You can't assemble 12 mates and go find a $200 million boat, and you know what I mean? It's like,
have you been sailing before? I've sailed out of Port Phillip Bay, flipped the boat with Scusi. He gave me one job and I was meant to pull some rope or something. He goes, Jonesy! And flipped and I went like arse in the air. Oh, mate, it was I shit myself. Yeah. And then after that, I never got invited. Yeah, no, the boat survived, but it took us about 4 hours to get it back.
I've actually got a sailing story. It's not my story. It's from my father-in-law. Well, yeah, my Caitlin's father. And
you're not quite ready for that to make that commitment, eh?
You want to cut that bit as well, George?
Yeah, cut that out. No. So if anyone, New Zealand listeners will be familiar with a piece of water in New Zealand, a notorious piece of water. It's killed, I think, six divers died there in 2008 maybe. It's the French Pass. It's this horrible bit of water out sort of in the Marlborough Sounds that goes between, it's basically between two islands in this huge, like crazy currents. And there's a lot of rumors about French Pass. There's a rumor that a guy feeds the sharks out there, just goes and knocks off one of his neighbor's cattle sporadically and goes and chucks it out in the bay and feeds the sharks.
I've heard of people being addicted to feed ducks and that, and they say that's no good, but this is next level.
Yeah, well, anyway, this is nothing to do with sharks.
There's a real bad habit if you feed the chickens all the time as well, apparently.
Yeah, you don't do that. That's not good for you either. So, this bit of water that's some of the strongest currents in New Zealand, and they were picking up a sailboat that had been repaired over in Nelson. So, and they had to sail it the whole way around to get it to Picton. And part of the bit of it is they had to sail it through French Pass. And the currents through there are just unbelievable. It's one of the most horrific bits of water. And they were towing the sailboat behind a normal boat. And on like a 200 meter bit of rope just to give it enough distance over it, you know, nothing can sort of go wrong apparently. And they were going through this bit of current and they were going with the tide, and then they were sort of, everything was fine. And then they suddenly looked off to their left and the boat that they were towing.
There's a cow in the water.
But the boat that they were towing had suddenly come level with them, and they're like, holy shit. So the water was going, so just off to their side, the water was so much stronger and that little bit of current that it had ripped the boat forward and was now traveling level with them, you know, but 100 meters off to their left. And they were like, oh shit, that's we need to, you know, get the tension back on the rope. And then they looked in front of them and there was a buoy, like a mooring, and they went, fuck. And the rope hooked around the mooring.
Oh no.
And sorry, to start with, it wasn't quite level with them. It was off to the side of them. It was way out to the side. Then it hooked around the mooring and then came level with them. And then suddenly they were both facing up current as this huge, as the boat started coming together around this bit of mooring. And this was a super expensive yacht that they had, that they were all shares in the yacht. And suddenly it starts going under, starts taking water and just going down. And this boat's sinking. Yeah, so luckily Mark cut the rope, just got it cut in time as it had already started going under a bit though, like the front end. Cuts the rope, but of course the current is going at, you know, I don't know how fast these things go. Obviously warp speeds, cuts the rope, and then suddenly the yacht just launches the whole way down the strait. So he has to do a pirate mission to board the boat, which has also been damaged, taking on water. And then they managed to save the boat. It was completely, obviously had to, it had just been, basically it had been getting repairs in Nelson. And so they basically were like, oh, well, chuck it back on and tow it back around to Nelson and get it fixed again.
Shit. Lucky they bloody cut the rope in time.
Speaking of towing the line, have you seen Meghan Markle's and Harry's interview on Oprah?
Yep.
Fuck no. What?
Yeah.
Arguably.
Did you actually sit down and watch that?
I watched it last night.
You actually sat down and watched it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mate, it's world news.
Why do you care?
I don't.
Well, you care enough to sit down and watch it?
I care. I was interested. I was certainly interested to see what.
Okay. I don't understand this about Royals. I don't understand this.
Not a Royals.
All
anymore.
They ever did was get.
Be bored.
They didn't ever do anything.
Come up with a new comment. Come up with a new.
Up the monarchy!
I'm named after one of them, but
no, you're right, George. And that I think that was it's kind of good. I wrote Harry, but I don't know that it was.
Did you feel sorry for them?
Nah, it was a hard.
It's very really hard to feel sorry for.
Yeah, I didn't feel sorry for her, really.
You know who's cashed in from all of this is bloody Piers Morgan. Like he saw it as a big platform to go right. I can't lose here if I go into bat for the royal family because, you know, they'd be loving all his comments and backing him up and whatever. And then if I create a massive stink and storm off my show, I've left it like such a big peak. Worldwide, I'm going to be the face of backing up the royal family. I can name a price. They reckon he's going to get like 13 million quid for his next gig.
Really?
It's huge. Yeah.
Well, I thought he had lost from that. I just assumed that he was unemployed because he left his job.
No.
Tesco's or something. Isn't he? There's like a photo of him at Tesco's or something.
Yeah. He's going to cash in massively. And then I saw...
Oprah's also going to cash in massively. Yeah. She does well, eh?
She's richest woman in America.
Really?
Yeah.
She's... I reckon she's a very dangerous woman, you know, because she's the most dangerous kind of woman. You know, like, if you see someone who's clearly a snake, you go, all right, I'll be a bit guard around here. But you see Oprah, she's a full honey trap. So
but she's good, man. She's good. She like
you
when
saw
you watch
the Lance Armstrong thing, you know, she makes there's this matey kind of like, oh, I'm with you. You can, you know, your secret's safe with me. I'm on your side.
But do you know what I found interesting about this interview was that I think they actually are friends because she went to the wedding.
Even
Harry's wedding, and they live the neighbors in LA now. But what I found interesting is that Harry and Meghan, they didn't get paid anything for it.
Yes, and now they're doing a deal with her on a new series, documentary series,
that Netflix series.
Yes,
the mental health one.
Yeah. So, all right, we haven't got paid for this interview, but we're going into bed with you for a series coming up.
Do you think they're going to be with Oprah? I think there's something neighborly. I mean, it's what are they doing? Are they going on
Do you know what my takeaway from the whole interview was? And George, you got to watch it just to get this takeaway. Was all that Harry, like Megan's trying to give all this juicy stuff, like I was suicidal, and you know, Kate made me cry, and then they made me blah 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 blah.
I wasn't prepared,
and I didn't know what I was doing, and blah blah. And then Harry comes on, and he's just like, you know, the dogs are happy here. He just kept talking about his dogs. And then,
he like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, he was.
Oh, yeah.
And then they had the dog, like, it was like this beagle or something, and it was dangerously old. It looked like it was about 80, and it could barely stand up, bro. It was like this. It was like limping across the chicken hoop.
Even the dogs,
we came out here, and, you know, I'm happy, the kids are happy, the dogs are happy. And then it'd be like, go to another shot, and he'd be like, you know, I don't mind it here. Like, I just take the dogs for a walk. They're happy. And, like, everything, it just went on for, like, 20 minutes. He'd be like, that's about his fucking dogs. And his dog was like this, bro.
How many times do you reckon he pulls that dog card throughout the day? Like, oh, I'm just taking the fucking dogs for a walk.
He just sounds like a bit of a rooster that's over it, eh?
Yeah.
Well, what about his face? Like, if you went to some sort of person that could read tells, I mean, when Oprah got told about the biggest revelation was someone told Harry in the family that they questioned what the skin color of their child was going to be, and Oprah was like, what?
Yeah.
And then she tells Harry, she goes, Megan's told us about this conversation, that, and you see his face, watch his eyes, they sort of blink for that extra half a second.
He's like,
I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to you know, say who said that or whatever. I heard, and we might get legals to check this, there's a whisper saying that it was Camilla. The question.
Really? I would have picked it. Yeah.
I think we got that off Twitter. I think
how much of a did you get it from Tika Tawadi?
This guy.
How much of a hypocrite is Charles though? Have you watched The Crown?
Nah.
So you've seen The Crown, haven't you, George?
Oh, I got a few episodes in and wanted to take my life. So,
oh mate, you got to watch. It's the best TV show I've watched in the last week. No, it's good. It's good. It's real good. And
do you go back to episode series one, or you just pick it up from wherever?
No, you got to watch the whole thing.
Yeah, okay. Watch the whole thing.
That's good. It's good. Anyway, at a certain point in The Crown, I can't remember what specifically what season, but Charles is, you know, getting to the point where he's going to marry Diana, but he doesn't want to marry Diana. He wants to marry Camilla, and he wants to, like, he's saying, like, oh, I don't care about the royal family. I'm not going to give up my love for this lady just to appease the royal family. I mean, eventually he does, but then eventually he gets back with Camilla, but he's like fully against how the monarch is run. He's like, no, that's bullshit. Like, why do I have to give up, you know, and do all this stuff? I'd rather not be in the family, blah, blah, blah. And then now he's like basically booted his son. Like, mate, you just toe the line or you're out of here. And so he's taking the dogs and they're fucking happy over in LA.
It came out that he was sick of being used as an ATM because Harry was ringing him all the time. It's like Harry's back at uni. He's just ringing his dad for cash. Dad, I'm out of funds. Can you wire us $4.5 million?
I was actually pretty interested to know what their financial situation is now. Like, obviously she has some money from being an actress from Suits and stuff. But I was like, does he actually have any money, Harry? Like, has he earned any money? Because I don't think he would have. And because he'd been cut off from the royal family, which included financial, I was like, he's effectively broke. He hasn't got any of his own money.
They're not broke. They are not broke.
But he said in the interview where he got his money from, and he said it's inheritance from Diana.
From Diana. It was 16 mil or something.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He get some sort of former Air Force pension?
No, but he's been booted from there, or he got his military titles taken off him.
Right. Well, that would have been good for 1,500 quid a week, at least.
Yeah. But
that'd be enough to feed the dogs.
Feed the beagles.
Anyway.
All right.
I think those dogs are just happy because they don't have to hang out with the Queen's fucking corgis and swans anymore.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of bell ends. Should we touch on ours?
Are we doing? I want to just make a quick note of like how the about 2 weeks ago when we said, okay, when we do get around to doing our next episode, let's go deep. Let's do an episode on a specific subject. So we're prepared for that. We're now 49 minutes in and we have not gone anywhere near that subject. So maybe we have to do it for the next step.
Yeah, we'll shelve that and do that next week.
Because we've gone completely off the run sheet.
I just read the legend of Ballend and who it was, and I didn't need to do any research because I've got legend of Ballend.
Josh, before we do it though, but how isn't it the legend of Ballend
relevant to what
relevant
we're going to
the about? Subject we were going to talk about?
Well, I don't know, but these people ruined my childhood. So,
but it is like if we do this legend of Ballend now without any context,
we'll
of
find
the show,
another one for next week.
Mate, I'm sure we could pluck another musician next week.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we just relevant. Do 10 minutes of music now?
Well, no, can I show you? Well, I just want to show you one little clip that I had, which was talk about music rabbit holes. The best is when you hear a banging track from the 80s that you haven't heard in 25 years at the right time. Like I'm driving along and I think I shared it with you, Bills. Johnny Cougar Mellencamp, Small Town. And then talk about rock star. As this version comes out on stage with a bunger half lit, like zero fucks given. And I love it how he's clearly on some sort of gear as well. The crowd are going nuts, gets the hand fist pumps going. Mate, look at this. You couldn't get away with this nowadays.
No. You know, that was like the last time anyone ever used hair gel. You know how at some point
the greasy gel.
They were all in the same toilet cubicle before they came out on stage.
I think so. They are all off their ollies. Jeez. They are fizzing.
There he goes.
Yeah, anyway.
Hey, speaking of classics, Caitlin was at Crowded House last night or night before in New Zealand.
Yeah, that cracked,
full stadium, full of people.
Speaking of toilet cubicles as well, did you know that I think it was Fleetwood Mac? Was it Fleetwood Mac who had the phone booth on the stage?
No, that was the Stones.
Oh, was it the Stones? Oh, really? Had the phone.
The traveling phone booth, and they just go in there and the snortatorium.
It was a snortatorium, so it was a prop on the stage, but they'd just go in and just do lines once they didn't have to leave the stage.
That's unbelievable. That's full rock star.
Yeah.
That made news around the world. Crowded House, 6,000 about 3 or 4 days ago, and then they're playing in Nelson, I saw.
It was Chicago, the band that had the snortatorium. You know, Midnight
Chicago.
Train.
Chicago. It was Chicago. Yeah.
That's everybody right. needs a little time away. Classic. Well, I thought Crowded House were done.
I think they just come together to during this stuff to unite the country again.
But I think
make some
it's
money, probably.
How many bands run out of cash? They do these big farewell concerts. Everyone's tearing up. Everyone's, you know, emotional. And it's like, okay, well, we'll see you in about 10 years when we've blown all our coin and we want to come back.
Right. I just had an idea. Okay. A light bulb moment just now. We were going to do a massively heavily focused music episode. I'm still keen to do that. I think that it's something that we would be good at. We're all three of us like music. Let's do that next week and then come in sing, which means our Legend of Ballend for today will be moved to that episode. Let's quickly wrap the show up by doing Legend of Ballend on Tika Tiwari. Put your argument forward. Is he a legend or a Ballend?
Well, I want to open the batting and say that if he's the man behind this theft, it's very brazen. It's very much like that guy I think I mentioned on Twitter that we talked about with wanted the 200K and jumped out of the plane. I mean, it's unheard of. You'd steal an account, use your own photo, and then try and flog Bitcoin. So I think my gut shot is he's a legend with Ballend tendencies. I mean, you don't condone Twitter profile theft, but he pulled it off. So I'd say legend.
Righto. GB, what are you thinking?
Well, I'm also of similar thoughts. I mean, the only major issue with him is that I'm 100 grand out of pocket after following his investment advice. So, you know, that's a real tick in the negative column for me. But on the other hand, there's a lot of pain behind that smile. If people that are watching on YouTube and people that will,
there isn't there. Look at them.
Yeah. People that we're gonna chuck them up on our Instagram page so people can have a good look at them, and you'll see what I mean. The pain behind the smile. So I feel like he's going through stuff, and he's trying to do something about it. So I'm going to vote legend. Also, I think he's done the world a favor by getting rid of a lot of your very marginal tweets and videos that are only going to come around and bite you in the ass.
Agree. Yeah. I was going to say the same thing, George. I think he's a legend because ultimately you've been pushing for this breathalyzer on my phone for years, and Tika is it.
That's it. You've been served. You've been served by the Twitter cop, Tika Tiwari.
Yeah. So I say legend because he's ultimately, like, as much as I'd like to have my Twitter account back, it hasn't been the end of the world not having it. I've been able to focus on other things. Yeah, like you say, I think the breathalyzer, it's, you know, it's come in a pretty difficult and harsh way, but ultimately I can't do those tweets and put us, compromise us anymore. So.
Yeah. That's right. All right. I think that's a great way to wrap things up.
Good on you, Tika. Yeah. You've got three unanimous legends.
I think he might be the first. He might be the first unanimous legend.
Yeah.
That's right. What a way to finish. What a legend. Yeah.
The only thing we have on merch. The only thing. Yes.
I want a cup with his face on it. That's my new merch. We're going to be doing from now on pre-orders for Tika Tiwari merch.
We'll put that photo on a cup.
I want a t-shirt with him and the big blue tick on the back. I want his face on the front. Blue
and then one. Well, Josie, go back to the screen to us. We'll put like Tika on the front here. That photo, and then on the back we'll say
at Sam Bewley,
we'll say like something like, is there pain in your smile? Have a cup of coffee or something.
Take the pain away.
Next one's on me. Tika Tiwari.
Tika, if you are listening, mate, send us a, just slide into our DMs. Don't hack us. Just slide into our DMs and
keep your mitts off.
There's a line there. Don't hack it, but slide into the DMs. You're more than welcome to come on the show. We'd love to hear your side of the story. And also, Tika, if you could like, share, and subscribe, that would be great to our YouTube channel. And don't hack that either. Please don't hack that one.
Well, do you reckon we could steal his image then for merch?
Like, why, it's sort of a 50-50. Why don't we do a bit of counter espionage and hack his accounts?
Yeah.
And I think we need the balls in our court. It's our move. So I think we need
That's it.
I honestly think George has hit, and he has come up with the best idea he's ever come up with on the show. I think the merchandise, Jonesy, we're going to nail that down in the next couple of days. That's almost ready to go. I think we can almost say in the next 6 to 7 months, it'll be ready. And, but I think we do it. I honestly reckon we run a real limited stock of Tika on coffee cups. Even if it's just like 10 of them or something.
Yeah.
And we charge like €300 a cup.
Oh, mate, I would wear a Tika hoodie, just his face right in the middle.
All right, boys.
And if there are any hackers out there and you want to join the Social Distance Podcast Hackathon, then send us a message straight to Tika and we'll get it sorted.
Good show, boys. Enjoy being back.
That's it.
See you later.
Good on you.
Thanks very much.